Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The Chicago Sky beat the Phoenix Mercury and are now champions of the Women's National Basketball Association. Champions. Remember what that was like, Chicago? Champions? So congratulations, Sky. The Sky had charisma, talent, execution, heart. And all of it unmasking our pitiful failures in the Chicago sports world. The Bears, the Blackhawks, the Bulls, the Sox, yeah. Getting run out of the playoffs in the first leg is a fail. And the Cubs. Oh, yes, the Cubs. Oh, and the beloved, but as for now, completely irrelevant Chicago Fire FC. As a season ticket holder, and I've been one for all the years that they've sucked, we Fire fans are isolated, locked in the cold mud pits of sports fan hell. But the Chicago Sky did not only unmask the other franchises, they showed us the other side of Mayor Lightfoot's face and unmasked her. Well, she unmasked herself in a sea of masks at the game and tweeted her masklessness to the people of Chicago. Perfecto. Almost as good, Lori, as getting your roots done while telling Chicago to stay locked up at home. You know what I expected her to do? I expected her to stand up. Too bad it wasn't a video. If it were a video rather than just a photo, she could have stood up like Green Bay Packer quarterback Aaron Rodgers on Sunday and shouted to Chicago, "I own you. I always own you."
Right on cue, Joe.
Did she just take her mask off for the photo? Did she stop breathing? Does it matter? She also owns not only Chicago, but apparently the freedom of speech, at least according to a Cook County judge who slapped a gag order on the Chicago Police Union. They can't talk about her COVID mandates, but she can talk about them. And she's taken away police vacations, and she's talking now in vindictive, vengeful terms. That's amazing. That's how to catch flies, right, Lori? With vinegar rather than honey? Of course she has different standards for cops and teachers. I talked to police over the weekend, and here's what one said. Quote, you want to see petty and vindictive? Teachers have no deadline. Their tests paid for at the schools. Police, a deadline, and we pay for our own tests. She says there will be consequences. We would have taken the deal that the teachers got, but because she doesn't get along with John Catanzara, she'll make us pay? That's not good management. That's petty and vindictive, said the police officer. Yeah, but it's so Chicago. This tension isn't really about COVID, is it? It's about pushback by cops all over the country on these mandates from the rules for thee but not for me political class. Cops are leaving the departments all over. And freedom of speech with the Department of Justice chilling speech of parents as it hunts domestic terrorists among school board dissenters? Well, we'll talk about all that today with Professor Charles Lipson, political scientist, writer, and my friend, and he'll put it in context. And for those of you who read my Sunday column on freedom of speech, parents aren't terrorists, Mr. President, they're Americans with something to say, you'll see the threads of this conversation working themselves into the column, because that's how this works. You talk to smart people, and you listen. At least, I try to talk to smart people. And Charles Lipson is one of them. My friend Jeff Carlin is here, as always, co-host of this podcast, the best radio producer in Chicago, and executive producer at WGN Radio. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, columnist at johncassnews.com. Ding! Hoping you'll subscribe and tell your friends where I'm writing. Because I haven't stopped writing. I can't stop. It would be impossible, especially now with Lori doing her Aaron Rodgers act. And you with the sky as champion. With Lori Lightfoot showing us the other side of her face. Both sides, actually. Full frontal. And Lori fighting with the cops again. And violence on the streets. And petty and vindictive in the government. You know where you are. You're on the Chicago Way. On WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
One thing about Chicago and the Chicago way is that you don't forget your friends. And you don't forget the people who backed you in a tough spot. And Charles Lipson, the Peter B. Ritzma professor emeritus at the University of Chicago, political scientist, professor, scholar, is one of those guys that you'd want if you were in a fight and you were in a foxhole or you were in a bar fight. You'd want this guy, even though he doesn't sound like it. He's got a great website called charleslipson.com. And I want you all to treat yourselves to go to it and see the wisdom. Come and see, said the carpenter. And I agree that it is just stunning. Charles, welcome to the Chicago Way again, my friend.
Thank you. Do you have any foxholes in mind, my friend? Bar fights are one thing I've managed to avoid during my long life.
Well, when I was getting dinged up, you came to my defense.
You were being wrongly attacked, and let's remind people what that was. You attacked not only state's attorney Kim Fox, but a number of the other state's attorneys or district attorneys around the country, so-called justice Democrats, were not prosecuting people for, you know, really serious crimes. All these kind of big shoplifting that we now see that's led to five Walgreens are closing in San Francisco because there's mass shoplifting, which is not being prosecuted. This is happening all over in St. Louis and Chicago and Los Angeles and so forth. And because many of them had received support from George Soros, and you mentioned that, you were attacked as being anti-Semitic, even though you had not said anything about his religion. He's really of Jewish background, but not practicing Jew. But in any event,
I thought he was Greek years ago. But yeah,
I know what you mean. There were Jews in the 1930s who used to think Roosevelt must be Jewish, right? But I mean, the fact is, you were being attacked opportunistically. There were people who wanted to get you and figure out a way. And since you hadn't said the N-word and you hadn't attacked gay people and you hadn't attacked this, you hadn't attacked that, they decided, okay, we can get him on this other thing. And it was just wrong. There are ways to attack someone like George Soros that would be wrong and would be anti-Semitic, but you didn't do that. And it's wrong to attack people falsely like that.
Well, I'm gone from the paper because of that. I mean, they gave me a buyout and I took it because I'd rather not look over my shoulder for the next knifing from union colleagues. But, you know, now they're giving it away for a penny a day.
Well worth it.
And I'm trying to, they're undercutting me because I'm trying to monetize what I'm doing at JohnCastNews.com. Ding. And I want all of you to subscribe and tell your friends. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk to Charles Lipson about the state of the world and the state of the nation. And I just wanted to bring up what's going on in Loudoun County.
John, I can give you the state of the world. You remember this game? I can name that song in two notes. I can name the state of the world in two letters. Ready?
Yeah.
Oi.
Right. Oi is right.
Oi.
Two letters.
Oh, yeah.
So in Loudoun County, there was a very compelling woman who stood before the school board there to condemn critical race theory. And Jeff has, she grew up in China under the Cultural Revolution. Jeff has her audio. I wondered if, Jeff, you mind playing it and then we can talk about it?
You bet. This comes from Twitter. Hang on. Here we go.
I've been very alarmed about what's going on in our school. You are now training our children to be social justice warriors and to loathe our country and our history. Growing up in Mao's China, all this seemed very familiar. The communist regime used the same critical theory to divide people. The only difference is they use class instead of race. During the Cultural Revolution, I witnessed students and teachers again turn against each other. We changed school names to be politically correct. We were taught to denounce our heritage. The Red Guards destroy anything that is not communist. Old statues, books, and anything else. We are also encouraged to report on each other, just like the Student Equity Ambassador Program and the Bias Reporting System. This is indeed the American version of the Chinese Cultural Revolution. The critical race theory has its roots in cultural Marxism. It should have no place in our schools.
Well, Charles, what did you think of that, Mom?
What a brave person, and how correct. It is true that cultural race theory has its roots in cultural Marxism, which is to say it comes out of what's called the Frankfurt School, which Correct. Were Marxists in Germany, fled Germany, and moved mostly to California, a few to New York as well. And then led by people like Herbert Marcuse, Theodore Adorno, and others, created a critical perspective on American history that was rooted primarily in class. That's been picked up by people who were interested more in race. Some were interested in gender as well. And used it mostly as a kind of the equivalent of Colin Kaepernick to kneel on all of our history. That's not to say our history is not flawed in many important ways, but and that should be taught, not only slavery, but the Jim Crow South and discrimination in the North and the status of women and ethnic groups as they came in. But there is a very positive story to tell about America. What that woman was saying, though, goes beyond the specifics. She's talking about the suppression of both speech and free thinking. And that's become very big and very nasty on almost all elite journals and on college campuses, even campuses that are rated at the very top of free speech, like the University of Chicago. Surveys show that well over a quarter of the people believe that there are some thoughts that you and I would say are well within the framework of normal American politics that shouldn't be expressed. And even more disturbing, they say about over 20% of the students, I think it was 23%, said that you should be able to use violence to suppress those thoughts. So what you have here is a kind of thought control that is being used by people who have political aims, and it is deeply antithetical to a constitutional democracy and to America's best values.
Where does it go?
It goes into potentially very bad situations unless people like your listeners and you and me and Jeff and so forth reclaim it. One way is that it becomes even more intense, and it's already spread from colleges down to the K-12 schools, and it's spreading into corporations. The fact that Netflix, for example, showed a special with Dave Chappelle, there were transgender people who didn't like it, and they literally ran into an attack the board of directors meeting at Netflix this last week. So that's one way it goes. It becomes more intense. The other is that, and these could happen simultaneously, is that you begin to get strong pushback. And you already see that in a number of places. You're seeing state legislatures say you can't teach critical race theory and the rest. That's a mild pushback compared to a populist pushback that looks more like January the 6th. And you're seeing that at some school board meetings. You're also seeing the United States Justice Department take laws that were designed to stop people from bombing court buildings and using those potentially against people who protest at school board meetings. Those, we all agree, nobody should threaten violence at those meetings. But those are local questions. Those are not international terrorism. And there's simply no reason for the FBI to become involved unless there is a terrorist movement involved. So there's the possibility of restoring free speech, as happened after the big Red Scare in the early 50s. But you'll notice that all the people who wrote plays and put on movies about the blacklist and so forth, they're saying nothing. They're on the wrong side of this. They're the ones who are doing the blacklist now.
And the part that mom alluded to that to me is the most terrifying and just un-American was also very focal and forthright in the blacklisting area and the Red Scare is the idea that they're trying to essentially enlist students as like a form of police to monitor and watch and see who's not following what we think they should be following. And that idea, because the whole point is to be there and educate these kids and teach them about, you know, the problems in U.S. history and the things we need to be, make sure we don't repeat and all that stuff. This is not one of them. Enlisting them to be snitching on people and tattling on people and being the eyes and ears of the ruling class, so to speak. That's completely un-American, and I can't believe that that's the world we're living in. And now I, you know, you're saying it, Charles, I have these flashbacks, like always reading the stuff about the Red Scare and McCarthyism and all that and thinking, wow, who is signing up to tattle on people? Who is doing this? How could you even think that was right? And now we're seeing it again before our eyes. What is going on?
It's very troubling. It's very troubling. And you put it in a very clear way. One important difference from that earlier period is that there was a foreign threat in that case from the Soviet Union, which had recently acquired atomic weapons. And so you could take people who were on the far left, and link them to the Soviet Union. And some were actually linked to the Soviet Union. They were spies or whatever, but many were just people who were strongly pro-union or very much leftist, and they tended to be lumped together. And that lumping together is another thing that you see today. I think it's important, though, for people not only to push back and analogize this to some of the worst things that have happened in history, but to remember a couple of important positive things. The first is that the achievement of free speech is a historically unique and incredibly valuable thing that we have managed to achieve in the United States, almost uniquely in the United States. Even in Canada, for example, if you said something about a religion that people didn't like, you could be shut down, your book couldn't be sold, things like that. The United States has had very free speech, and that's been encoded in the First Amendment. And Britain, the source of many of these freedoms, doesn't have the First Amendment. And it certainly doesn't exist on the continent, even though they have relatively free speech there. The second thing is that there's a value to free speech. There are lots of values to free speech. Other people might have the right idea. The contest of ideas in colleges, in the public realm, on the pages of the Tribune, wherever it might be, leads people to think in deeper ways about these issues. And finally, the ability to express your own views, to not have them suppressed or not be forced to express other people's views as if they were your own, is part of what we mean by human flourishing.
We've seen it happen again and again in history, and I can't think of a more eloquent summation than that.
Well, thank you.
The chilling, and that's why I'm glad that, and people love you when you come on this show and this podcast, Charles, and they keep asking, when is Charles Lipson going to come back? And
I thought that was mostly me that was asking that, yeah.
Okay, all right. I deserve that. But it's true. But it's true. Jeff will testify.
Yep.
But in a way, it's sort of like the death of free speech is the death of comedy. You've mentioned that with the Netflix thing.
Which I give credit to the Netflix execs for sticking up for it and saying, no, you're wrong. This is
comedy. People know that comedians don't go to college campuses anymore? Comedians,
yeah.
This has been going on for several years. And it was a kind of canary in the coal mine. But we've seen it spread to the wider culture. People used to think, well, what'll happen to these students and their sense of preciosity when they get out into the real world? And the answer is they changed the real world, and they've changed it for the worse. But I don't want to blame younger people. I think a lot of this really started in the late 60s in the baby boomer generation, which went on to become college professors and to distort old-fashioned liberal values, liberal not in the Teddy Kennedy sense, but in the broad sense that we've been talking about. I was looking. I hope viewers or listeners, I should say, I hope listeners have a memory of those great Norman Rockwell pictures of the Four Freedoms.
You know,
yeah, go ahead, John.
There was a friend of mine just brought that up. The painting that I think you're about to refer to, Freedom of Speech, where the right. young, sort of young but haggard and thin man, mm-hmm. look, could have been a veteran of World War II, mm-hmm. stands up. He's in a mm-hmm. leather jacket, and mm-hmm. he he's being looked at reverently by another man, approvingly by another man sitting behind him in the Rockwell painting, who may have been, well, is of the age to have served in World War One, and it's just stunning, hopeful.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I hadn't published it, but I did a, I like to sometimes play with pictures. It's part of my, I subscribe to the hobby magazine that the old comedy troupe, Bob and Ray used to talk about, wasting time. Well, and this one, I had that one, and I have surrounded him with students with bullhorns trying to shout him down. And I think that that summarizes where the problem that we have now. These are not necessarily people who are agreeing with him. Their sense of reverence in looking at him is, and he looks kind of like Lincoln to me.
Yeah, without the beard. Right, the young Lincoln, the one that's in the statue prison now, or maybe relegated to the statue prison in Chicago.
But that we need to restore that sense that, as I joke sometimes, I don't agree with what you say, Jeff and John, but I will defend to your death your right to say it.
I don't think Voltaire, we had that, since we started this thing on discussion on free speech and started it, you know, what happened at the Tribune or the paper, the quotation was on the wall next in the grand lobby of the Gothic a temple of journalism that I used to work in. And I don't think did he ever really say that, though? Didn't Voltaire say those words, or is it attributed to him and there's some apocryphal, I don't know.
You know, I think Yogi Berra was the one who really said it. Or Mark Twain, or Winston Churchill.
I think it was Lincoln.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but it's important to reassert these values and to say that they're an important American tradition. Let me just say something about critical race theory that I think has been missing. Besides the fact that everybody has to march to that tune and you're figuratively hung in effigy if you don't. And that is that it is true that the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and the First Ten Amendments were written by people, some of whom were slave owners. But it is also true that the values embodied in that were not, it's misleading to just say, oh, they were hypocrites. They gave us a set of very valuable principles, and people like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and the women who fought for the right to vote, and gay people who fought for their rights and so forth, were able to invoke those principles of human equality that go back to our very founding as principles that are widely shared in the society, and use those as political levers to gain their full rights. That's something wonderful about America.
The brilliance of the documents and the founders is, yes, that some may have been slave owners, but what they started transformed a nation. And
Absolutely. And we shouldn't forget how valuable and how historically rare those are.
Those seeds, I mean, like you said, planted that then, even if they were planted in, you know, tumultuous soil, are what people should be fighting for, and are to an extent in some of that. And that's, I mean, I know lots of teachers who, in the idea of critical race theory, they don't see it as the idea of using it as a weapon or a cudgel to bash those who are in power or whatever. But they use it as an enlightenment, as the idea that you know, the union we have in this country is still not perfect yet, and it's a work in progress.
Well, that's right.
It will be.
That's right. If you use it like they use a carrot in those dog races, right, as something that's just a little in front of us, and that if we keep striving, we might be able to catch, even if we never do, that's all valuable. But I think the sense that we all should live in guilt, and that's wrong. And I think the sense that we are held responsible for acts of prior generations are also wrong. But I think it's pretty clear to me, at least, that people don't get ahead if they really begin to think of themselves as victims. And it's not a good thing to think of yourself wrongly, I would say, as a victimizer. Who did Bill Gates victimize? No one. He created value. Who are the people who live in good circumstances in Winnetka and Glencoe? Who are they victimizing to do that? No one, as far as I can tell. Why should they live in guilt?
It's amazing too, and this is top of mind to me just because it was one of the stories that kind of hit this week as we're taping. Mm-hmm. In this Katie Couric memoir, where she helped and she supported the spiking of part of an interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who actually said that exact thing essentially about Colin Kaepernick being like, "Yeah, I support his right to do what he's doing, but he's overlooking the fact that he lives in a country that far and above gives him the opportunity to do what he's doing." And to not acknowledge that is dangerous.
Well, Jeff, here's where the left and the critical race theory and all that stew becomes poisonous, because it's not just the suppression of free speech, the suppression of jokes. And I refer you to Umberto Eco's novel about the monk and the murders in the monastery,
Name of the Rose,
where the old monk was poisoning people because he didn't want them to read Aristotle's book on comedy.
Well, I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah, because why? I mean, how could he be funny? I mean, Aristotle telling jokes. I don't know. I don't like that, but. But Katie Couric, in that what she did is about self-censorship for herself, for her own career, to protect it against the left. And it's also, I think, what people don't like about the news media, or many people don't like, right, which is not just I'm going to inject my opinion in a story about Lightfoot and the cops in the news section. Mm-hmm. But I will withhold information that I find to be negative or to my politics. And therefore, it's like a sin of omission if we still believed in sins.
All the news that we think is fit for you to consume. And obviously newspapers have to make choices about what they can print. This is just abomination to see this kind of thought control and this kind of selection. So I completely agree with that. I would also say that there's a deep sense of grievance that's growing in the country over the failure of major policies. And we can talk a little bit about that, but I think that what's happening is a growing sense of disorder in the country. And that's not just attributable to Joe Biden's presidency.
No,
it happened during the Trump years as well.
It happened. It began when the Democrats did not listen to Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
Well, you are so right. But there is a sense of disorder, and and you can see it on the border, and you can see it with shoplifting, and you can see it with these Justice Democrats and so forth. But now that's being compounded with a whole series of public policy failures that are reflected in inflation and a number of other problems that are associated with basic incompetence in the Biden administration. And it's the public's going to push back against it, but it's really striking to watch this administration try to push through an agenda that they didn't run on and that is clearly unpopular, because they think that once they get that camel's nose inside the tent, that it can never be pushed out again. They're really pushing to transform America into a social democracy along the European lines, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and so forth, with massive transfers of wealth, with centralized control in Washington. This is not Marxism, and it's misleading to think of that as Marxism. I think some of the thought control that we were talking about earlier is closer to dictatorial control of all sorts. But what they're talking about, what their aim is really to change America into something like France or Germany or Italy. And they're doing it without any public mandate to do that. And what they want to do is put in place policies that can never be reversed.
Now, a few months ago, when you were here last, or maybe it was longer, you talked about a great awakening. You know, we talked about the great awakening of the country in the 1860s and now, and now a great awakening. But when you have the FBI being weaponized against the people so that moms and dads who don't like what's being taught at school are considered and tarred by the government, by many in the media, and by the FBI as potential terrorists, what happens?
Well, those people know they aren't terrorists. And to be labeled as terrorists by their own government is infuriating, and there'll be pushback. And I'm very fearful of pushback from the far right against what they perceive as push from the far left. And let me just say that Donald Trump's continuing rants about the election being stolen are part of this erosion of democracy. There's no evidence that's been shown that there was widespread fraud. There were allegations of it. Those needed to be looked into. Basically, they were. And nothing was ever proven on a massive scale. Now, that's not to say that further investigation couldn't find something. But in the absence of that, for a former president to say, as he's basically said since last November the 3rd and continues to say, that the election was stolen, deeply erodes our sense that whoever is elected is legitimate. Trump was not alone. Remember, Hillary Clinton said that under no circumstances, she said in advance of the election, under no circumstances should Joe Biden concede that night. In other words,
she said she wouldn't concede herself.
Right, exactly. And that's the kind of statement that progressively undermines the sense of a confidence that we're living in a legitimate democratic state. It's a terrible thing.
Jeff knows that I'm constantly being pestered by biting flies of the left who say that they keep asking me, including some people that I thought were friends, keep asking me, when are you going to write the column that you said it wasn't stolen, but it was rigged? And I just got this book by Molly Hemingway. I'm reading it now. Mm-hmm. It's called Rigged. And I think that in some respects, while Trump is completely wrong, and not my favorite candidate, and I wanted Rand Paul to be president, the big tech and media suppression of stories and pushing propaganda that wasn't true, and the now you see Katie Couric issue that Jeff brought up, and you see George Stephanopoulos, lionizing the discredited spy Steele from Britain, who wrote the dossier that was not true. All of this suggests to me, at least to a, and I hope I'm still normal, even though some of my old friends.
Oh, nobody'd accuse you of that.
Yeah,
really.
That an argument can be made that all this is about rigging.
Well, newspapers and so forth have always had editorial stances that preferred one candidate or another. And the use of state instruments like the Chicago Machine always push their own candidates, and sometimes through quite illicit methods, right? Running people with identical names and all those kinds of things to dilute their opponent's votes.
Or the Greek guy named Papadopoulos changes his name to O'Leary to become a judge.
Well, you've always had that. What's new now is that you have these big tech companies that not only put out their own kind of agenda, but they're able to effectively suppress the ability of others to read things. There was a quite legitimate story about Hunter Biden's corruption that the New York Post, the fourth largest circulating newspaper in the United States, had run before the election. And it was essentially prevented from being on any social media. Most of them kept it off. And that was a major assist to Joe Biden in being elected. And we know that because we know that people who voted for him were interviewed later and asked, well, did this particular issue affect your thinking? And they simply didn't know about it. And when they were asked, I think it was 6 to 10% of them said that it would have changed how they voted. So these things have an effect, and big tech is trying to shape our views on this. That's not new. As I say, newspapers and political organizations have done it before, but the mechanisms are new and they're very pervasive, and they have all kind of information about us that nobody ever had before. They know, basically, they know when you're sleeping, they know when you're awake, they know if you've been bad or good.
It's, you know, and I've always thought about that too. I didn't grow up in the era. I grew up after it, but you know, there was a time when they broke up the bells because they controlled too much, and they were too powerful. And you had, you know, the excuse me, you had, and before that you had, you know, Rockefeller and all that, that idea that the government was in this lock and balance to control power, but leave power in the hands of the most people. And there's this massive reticence to do that now. And I'm assuming it's because all these groups are paying exorbitant amounts of money to political groups and allies and trying to keep that from happening. But we look at or look around groups like Amazon, Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, Twitter. I mean, all these groups, they control so much of our society and literally control it. And they are the gatekeepers to what people you know, can do and what they can say or what they can do between people. I mean, even the idea that Apple was going to skim people's phones to look for, you know, for child porn, you know, that was the only thing that rose to the level of people being like, we can't let them do that. That's too much.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the pedophiles getting activated or if it was the masses, but it
get in the way of their porn or their online gambling.
Right. And so how do we get there? I mean, is it money in politics? Is it we just don't care? Is it we're brainwashing kids in school? I just don't know how we got here.
I think that there's a general sense that that the country wants a restoration of some basic elements of order. And I think part of the problem that Joe Biden faces is I think his presidency is based on bait and switch. I think people voted against Trump. I think they didn't vote for Biden. I mean, Trump got more votes in this election than he got when he was first elected. So I don't mean to say that people didn't vote for Trump. They vote, a lot of them did vote for Trump. But Biden was not elected as an affirmative act. He was basically elected as a rejection of Trump. And the way, and they ran a smart campaign so that they didn't run it as Biden against Trump. They ran it as Trump against Trump, and Trump lost in Trump against Trump. But Biden was essentially promising a restoration of normalcy and that he was running as a center-left candidate. Now, some of his comments were more progressive, and the party has moved to the left. But what he's governed as has been much further left. He's governed much more like Bernie Sanders, and even the Democrats didn't nominate Bernie Sanders. So he simply hasn't delivered in terms of the substance of the policies that he promised. But beyond that, I think people are beginning to form an indelible view that he's simply incompetent.
If you want to get into the mind of the man who's speaking, Charles Lipson, you go to charleslipson.com, type it in your browser. You'll see his columns that for the Real Clear Politics, Spectator World, many other, a lot of commentary here in various publications. And it is a pleasure, sir. And I can't invite them into our email group where you lament the it's you, me, John, Corey Franklin, Kristen, Bruce, John McCormick.
All the people who were fired from the Tribune.
Yeah, all the people
and our friends.
All the people who left, and Liam Ford, who's not fired, but. Yeah, I can't invite them there because they might, you know, they might be offended by things. But I really, truly, if you're listening, I know you're listening and I know you're interested because you're here listening. So I recommend going to charleslipson.com.
Well, thank you. Checks in the mail.
How dare you, sir? Yeah. Oh, last one. Have you seen any good movies lately? Because there's one coming out that has Charles Lipson's name all over it, and it's not James Bond, although I like that one. This is the movie about the last duel.
Oh, Yes, I've seen that that's coming out, but I haven't watched it. I'll tell you what I've been doing in these dark days. I've been reading a lot of political, a lot of philosophy, just general philosophy, medieval Catholics, Aristotle, Plato, all of that. And watching some of the humor that I've liked. And my favorite for many years has been Norm Macdonald, and I do mourn his passing.
Yes, I do. I do too, and Jeff does too. The idea of Charles Lipton reading philosophy and searching for the comedies that Aristotle wrote, is it where you're sitting near a fireplace with a cup of tea, or are you at your kitchen table with, like, say, a spoon in the marmalade jar while you're, you know, I remember one of my favorite writers, Isaac Bashevis Singer, who was interviewed by 60 Minutes, and I thought they would talk to him, you know, at a library with the fire.
And, you know, it's funny.
And instead, he was at his kitchen table. There was a teaspoon in the marmalade jar, and he was having toast or something.
You know, I let me tell you, I'm not a tea drinker. I'm a coffee drinker, and I just had a cup of coffee, but I have one of those Nespresso machines. And I have decided, your listeners can decide whether this is true for them or not, but my kids call me up a year or two ago. One of my kids, they're adults. One of them said, "Oh, this machine is on sale." And I was thinking about buying it. And do you think I should? And you can put in a little pod, but it's better. It's a Nespresso machine, and it makes real something close to a cappuccino. And the deal was you could get a milk foamer and this machine together for the price of just the machine. And it looked good. And I said, "Would you like one?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Your dad's treat." I said, "Do you think your brother," he has a twin brother, "do you think he would like it too?" And he said, "Yeah." And so I said, "I'll give him one too." And then I thought, hey, what am I, chopped liver? I'm going to buy one for myself. So I bought one, and I've decided, John and Jeff, what I like about making coffee in this machine. And it's this: it makes noise, it makes steam. It makes a good cup of coffee, but the noise and the steam and the activity all let me do the equivalent of playing with my Lionel train when I was 6 years old. But I can do it now as an adult.
And you get coffee.
That's fantastic.
And yeah, I get coffee. Yeah, my Lionel train would come around, and it would make a little smoke, and it would toot toot. But this is even better. It makes the smoke. It makes the equivalent of the toot toot. And at the end, I get a cup of coffee.
You made George Clooney proud.
I can see a column coming from Charles Lipson about what do kids play with now in this age of darkness, not enlightenment. They don't play with trains. They just go on they get their brain sucked out. Play video games.
yes. Well, that's a world well beyond my ken. You know,
just the idea of you playing a open world video game like Red Dead Redemption 2, which Jeff and I play, it would be fascinating. I would like to make a documentary of it, where you become Arthur Morgan and travel around the West shooting bad guys and doing good deeds or bad deeds. Yes.
No, I'm more from the old reruns of Gunsmoke era. Nice to talk to you fellows.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you, Charles. Thank Bye-bye. You so much.
Bye.
For Charles Lipson, our friend, writer, thinker, professor, political scientist, Peter B. Ritzma Professor Emeritus from the University of Chicago. And for Jeff Carlin, my friend, master baker, although I'm not allowed pies anymore, cat lover, the best radio producer in Chicago, executive producer at WGN Radio. And I mean it, Jeff. That last one you did on with Thunderdome was just, I just loved it. Thanks, buddy. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, chief bottle washer at johncassnews.com. And please tell all your friends, start subscribing. I need it. Thanks for joining us on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.